Good moed to everyone. Moadim l'simcha for Sukkos. Hope everyone's having a good Sukkos. Hope everyone's Sukkah is in one piece. And hope everyone's feeling okay. I don't know if Meir is just being comfortable or if he's resting, but hopefully you rest well and you're doing okay. You make me concerned over there. Okay, either way. So let's say the Vilna Gaon. So everyone knows the name the Vilna Gaon or the Gra. It's the same person. The Gra and the Vilna Gaon are the same person. Where does the Vilna Gaon come from? So let's start with a story. A story which, like most of our stories, we can't necessarily guarantee or confirm their validity. But as we said from the Chafetz Chaim, they don't say stories like this about me or you. So they say that one time Rav Chaim Volozhiner, who was known as the greatest student, or the main student, we'll see exactly what that means to be a student of the Vilna Gaon, we'll see that soon. But Rav Chaim Volozhiner once was passing by a certain spot in Vilna, and he said to his Talmidim, you know, Baruch Hashem she'asa li neis b'makom hazeh. Blessed is Hashem who made a miracle for me in this place. The students looked at him and said, what are you talking about? You live in Volozhin. Why are you talking about something that happens in Vilna? So his student says, the student asked him what happened. He said, one time there was a woman, and this woman was pushing a baby in a stroller, and it was a cold day, and she slipped, and the stroller went rolling down the hill. The stroller went down the hill, it hit the railing, and the baby girl fell into the river. And some strangers picked up the baby, got to it before it drowned, and they saved her. They warmed her by the fire, and Baruch Hashem, this little girl's name was Trena, and Trena grew up to marry a man named Rav Shlomo Zalman, and Rav Shlomo Zalman and Trena had a son named Eliyahu. Those were the parents. That little girl was the mother of the Gra. So Rav Chaim Volozhiner, the main student of the Gra, always passed by that place. He would always say Baruch Hashem. Because of the great miracle that happened to his Rebbe's mother that allowed him to even be born. That is one of those legends that we have that lends to sort of the mystique of the person we're talking about. In this case, it's the Gra, the Vilna Gaon. And as you might know, the Vilna Gaon, his name was Reb Eliyahu ben Shlomo. Some people like to say his name was Kramer. His last name. This is probably a retroactive last name. We know that his descendant's name was Kramer. We don't necessarily know that his name was ever Kramer. We assume that that he didn't have a last name. This is one of those times, one of those places, early 18th century, you don't really know if people have last names. Depends where you are. Depends who you are. The Sephardim at that point, I think, had last names, but the Ashkenazim were a little behind the ball. So, unclear if the Gra actually had a last name, or he just went by Reb Eliyahu ben Shlomo. He ends up going by the Gaon HaChassid, right, Mivilna. But for now, he doesn't have a last name. We'll talk about other things that are attributed to him under his last name, Kramer, later. But he has somewhat of a legendary upbringing. According to the legend, he had a photographic memory even as a child. Now, what exactly a photographic memory means, I couldn't tell you. But they say that he finished Tanakh already by the age of 4. I don't know what that means. Right? These are things that we can't really understand. They say that by the age of 6 or 7, unclear if it was 6 or 7, depending on how impressed you want to be. 6 or 7, he was learning Gemara with his Rebbe, the Pnei Moshe. The Pnei Moshe of Moshe Margulies is the main commentary on the Yerushalmi, which will come up later with his student, Rav Chaim Volozhiner, we'll see soon. And apparently, even as a child, before he was bar mitzvah, 7 or 8 years old, he was already giving shir, he was already giving a lecture, as a child, in the great synagogue of Vilna. So, one thing you'll hear about many of these stories, as opposed to other legends that we've sort of stories that are hard to confirm, a lot of the Gra stories actually take place with a lot of other people around. So it's hard to have made them up. So when we say that the Gra was giving shir, was teaching Torah in the great synagogue of Vilna, It's kind of one of those stories you can't make up. There are a lot of people around. Did he really finish Tanakh when he was four? I don't know. That's his own thing. But to say that he was giving shir, he was teaching Torah, he was giving a lecture already in the Great Synagogue of Vilna, that's a hard thing to make up, but everybody's at the shir. So that's another one of those things that that the Gra has, as opposed to other legends. He has this, I guess naturally confirming, audience at many of his stories. So by eight, they say that he was already learning astronomy in his free time, and by nine, he was already learning Kabbalah. This was according to his children, said that. The age of 10 was not a time where he finished something. It was a time where he started to learn by himself. Because, as the story goes, his Rebbe, Rav Moshe Margulies, the main commentator on the Talmud Yerushalmi that we talk about, he said, I have nothing else to teach this boy. The Gra had already surpassed him in knowledge to the extent that it wasn't worth learning by the Pnei Moshe, because the Gra already knew everything he could teach him. So this is the person we're dealing with. He's only 10 years old. He's not even bar mitzvah. You're right. And as we're saying, the legends of the Gra are perhaps most, unbelievable relative to all other rabbis, all other stories that we've heard, but they're well known. And already while he was a teenager, people started asking him questions. But what's interesting about the Gra is that although while he was a teenager, he was already getting renown and being asked questions, he was already teaching in the Great Synagogue of Vilna, he doesn't really ever assume the role of some kind of big rabbi. He doesn't want to necessarily do that. And instead, the story has it that he would travel in Poland and Lithuania as a beggar, because he didn't want to actually assume any pulpit. He didn't want to assume any important rabbinic position. He wanted to just learn. He wanted to go around, be supported by different people so that he could learn a little bit more. And ultimately, by the age of 28, he settles in Vilna, back where he was from. He settles in Vilna, and people were willing to pay him, right? After he sort of established his genius, he established who he was, and the fact that people, sent him questions from all over. So they wanted him to just sit and learn and be the rabbi of Vilna, while not being the rabbi of Vilna, right? He was basically a rabbi, but he wasn't in any formal position, but the people still paid his way. They paid him because he refused to be the rabbi, although they very much wanted him to be. But even under this sort of quasi role as the rabbi of Vilna, the Gaon, the genius of Vilna, he was in many ways a very much of a recluse. Recluse meaning he stayed to himself, right? The people were paying him to learn, and that's literally what he did. He learned. He learned Torah. He learned other things, as we'll see soon. They say in these years that for 50 years, from the age of 28, he passes away at the end of his life after 50 years. From the age of 28, they say that he only slept for 2 hours a day. I know people are familiar with this. This might be based on his scientific knowledge. I had a friend, or I guess I probably should say classmate, when I was growing up, who tried to do something like this. There's actually a science to this, to manipulate your circadian rhythm to immediately enter into REM sleep. You can train it to go right into REM sleep if you sleep very little, right? So what the Gra would do, apparently, he would sleep not 2 hours in a row. It wasn't like he went to sleep from 1 o'clock to 3 o'clock in the morning. He would go to sleep for half hours, four times throughout the day. He would, he would be up for 6 hours, he'd take a half hour nap. He'd be up for another 5.5 hours, take a half hour nap. And he would block out his time in that way. And they say that scientifically, if you were to do it in that way, you actually train your body to go right into the type of sleep that you need for your body to function. Right? Most of us, when we go to sleep, so there's, I think, like a 3 or 4 hour cycle, and you get what's called rapid eye movement sleep at a certain point, and it doesn't last for very long, but that's the sleep that you really need to regenerate your energy, right? To regenerate your body for the next morning. It's really those minutes that are most crucial. Apparently, the Gra was able to train his body that in those half-hour sleeps, they went right into REM sleep, this rapid eye movement sleep, and he was able to regenerate himself for the next 4 hours. And that's how he did it for 50 years. He slept 2 hours in the whole day, throughout the day, and that's how he was able to amass so much Torah knowledge and also maintain his rigorous willing, you know, his rigorous, you know, desire to continue learning Torah. And he was known for his piety, but mostly for his use of time. At this point, by the age of 28, or somewhere around there, he got his two nicknames, Hagon and Hachasid. You'll see this in the introduction to anything he says, Hagon Hachasid Rev Eliyahu Mivilna, or something like that. You'll see the word, the Gra, is Gon Rav Eliyahu. And the Vilna Gon, right? This is just a translation of what the Hebrew is. He was known as the genius. Legend has it, in terms of his time management that we were talking about before, in terms of his time management, apparently he would keep a paper log. He would keep a paper always next to him, and any time he felt that he didn't use 1 minute of his day properly, he would write down a dot. He would put a dot on the paper. And they say that at the end of the year, starting Rosh Chodesh Elul, that's what he would use as his thing that he wanted to do tshuva for all those dots. So you think to yourself, over an entire week, how many dots would we have on our paper? Hundreds of dots in 1 week. Thousands of dots in a month. You know, hundreds of thousands in a year. They say, the legend is, that for his dots, he would only have about 40 dots. By the time Rosh Hashanah came around, he would have 40 dots on his paper, 40 wasted minutes. This is apparently the legend, according to one of his students. And he would do tshuva, and the legend continues in saying that when he would cry on Yom Kippur, when he would cry on Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur to do tshuva, he would cry until the tears would dissolve the dots that were on his paper. That's what they say. That's how much he would care about those minutes. Another story, which is somewhat radical, which maybe is not for our, it's not for our, you know, not for our world, right? But he says, to one time, they say, his sister came. His sister came to visit him. Came to visit him in Vilna. I'm not sure where she was coming from. But they hadn't seen each other in 20 years. 20 years his sister hadn't seen him. Sister comes in. They spend about a minute on pleasantries, which is a dot, maybe, depending on how the Vilna go and how strict he was about the dot. Sounds like he was pretty strict. And then he said to his sister these words, probably not in English, but he said, "Do you see the white streaks in my beard?" That's what he said to her. And he said, "I don't have a lot of time left. If you don't mind, we can talk in Olam Haba." That's what the Gra said to his sister, who he hadn't seen in 20 years. He said, "I don't have that much time left to sit and learn. If you could, please, please let's postpone this conversation until the next world." That's how the Gra viewed his life. A lot of mussar to take out, not telling anyone. I'm not telling anyone to ignore their family. I'm not telling anyone to ignore their friends. But that's how the Gra viewed his time. They say that one time he spoke at a siyum. And a siyum is something, you know, you celebrate the finishing of a certain Gemara, or maybe you celebrate the finishing of, you know, all of Mishnah. So he spoke. He was the keynote speaker. I wonder how much he charged. Probably nothing. But you can imagine how much people would want to pay him to have the Gra speak at your siyum. So the Gra said to the siyum that he was able to track every single line of Torah Sheba'al Peh, every single, you know, phrasing of the rabbis. He was able to trace it back to the exact pasuk. And a different legend, in a similar way, they say that he would, when he would get older, he wouldn't open up a Gemara. He wouldn't open up the Talmud to do Chazara, to do review. Instead, he would just open up an actual Torah. And when he read a pasuk, he was able to think to himself all the different Gemaras and all of the different commentaries that go through the Gemaras that all revolve around that pasuk or that letter or that little line or that little, the order or the spacing between the different letters. He was able to just review his Torah by reading the Torah. Right, we think about the Torah Shebichsav, the Torah Shebapeh, that they work in tandem. We need both of them. He was able to just learn the Torah Shebichsav, and he knew all of the Torah Shebapeh. They say that he said in that Siyum, there were only two passages in the entire corpus of Torah that he didn't understand, and they were in the Zohar. And he said, apparently, in that Siyum, if he would know someone who knew how to explain those two passages in the Zohar, he would walk to their kever, and he'd wait until Mashiach, so he could ask that person how to understand them. That's what they say about the Gra that he said at this Siyum. That's how much he valued understanding every part of Torah. He was also well-versed in sciences. The legend has it, although I'm not too sure about this, it's almost impossible to confirm this. Legend has it that he learned mathematics and science while he was in the bathroom. Because, as we just saw, the Gra used every minute to the best of his abilities, and he used every minute for Torah learning, and therefore, the only time that you're not allowed to learn Torah is when you're in a bathroom. So for the Gra, he learned mathematics and science, but of course for the Gra, it wasn't simply for the sake of learning, just to learn math and science, it was in order to learn Torah. Anyone who's doing Daf Yomi knows that the Daf on the second day of Sukkot was particularly difficult because of all the mathematics that were involved. So this is what the Gra means. The Gra was learning Torah with math and science, right? That's how he learned all the Torah. He actually has books that he's written. The Ayal Meshulash. I don't know what it's about. I probably wouldn't understand it if I tried to learn it. But the Gra apparently wrote that book, and it's all about science and different aspects of math also. They say apparently that there were two scientific expertise that he never wanted to be the expert. He never wanted to be a Bucky in these two areas. Number one was botany. There's another one of these legends. Number one was botany. He didn't want to work outside in the field. It would sort of take his energy away and it would cause a lot of wasted time. So he didn't know a lot about plant life. And number two was medicine. He didn't want to be known as an expert in medicine because, as he knew from the Rambam, Maimonides, who we spoke about last December, last Kislev, the Rambam gave up a lot of his time after his brother David passed away, who had basically supported all of his learning. The Rambam had to become the physician, and he was a very good physician. He was known throughout all of Egypt as being one of the best physicians. The Sultan himself was coming to the Rambam for his medical advice. And the Rambam tells us in his own letters to his children, to his students, that he has no time. He's from morning until evening. He's like Moshe Rabbeinu. Right? Yomam v'layla, he's just answering people's medical questions. And the Gra didn't want that. The Gra wanted to be able to learn. Even though he valued the science, he didn't want to become an expert in medicine, lest he lose the time to learn the Torah that he wanted to learn. They say, that not only did he learn mathematics, did he learn science, but he had become such an expert that there's one mathematical concept called Cramer's Rule. I don't know what it is, nor do I care to know what it is, because I doubt it'll ever come up in my own life, except for verifying whether or not this legend is true. They say that Cramer's Rule is actually from the Gra, from the Vilna Gaon. It's a nice story. When I looked into it, and when others looked into it, it seems to not be true. Number one, as we said earlier, his name wasn't really Cramer when he was alive. His descendants were named Cramer, so unless you say that the rule was retroactively named after him, it's a hard sell. They say that it's named after some other person named Cramer. Not sure if he was Jewish or not. But either way, I'd put my money on it, he probably was. But either way, the Gra was still an expert in math and science. We know we have books from him that were his testament to that. Perhaps one of the, most public stances that the Vilna Gaon took was in his opposition to Hasidus. Hasidus, as we've talked about before, the Baal Shem Tov comes around in the 1750s, becomes more popular because of the Maggid of Meserich, Reb Dov Ber of Meserich, And they say that, or I say, I don't know if they say, but at least I say, that the Maggid of Mezrich made Hasidus into Hasidus. The Baal Shem Tov had his little group of Talmidim, and the Baal Shem Tov never had the intention to spread it out over all Poland, and to Ukraine, and to Russia. It was really the Maggid of Mezrich, the main student, although that itself is controversial to say, the main student of the Baal Shem Tov, who decided himself to send all of his Talmidim to different places. So he sent Rishner Zalman of Li'adi to Li'adi, right? He sent Rav Aaron to Karlin, right? All these different types of Hasidus come from the Maggid of Mezrich. And at this point, the Maggid passes away, I think also in the 1750s, 1760s range. And his students take up the mantle of Hasidus. And it's those students, I'm not sure, I think during the Maggid's life, the Maggid was very unwell. He had bad legs. I don't know if we've talked about the Maggid before. But he didn't really travel much. Earlier in his life he was, that's why he was called the Maggid. But later in life he would send his Talmidim to go do things. And he sends the Baal HaTanya, Rav Shner Zalman, and he sends... story has it, I think it was Rav Shmuel of Nicholsburg, but I think there are different accounts of how it happens. He sends them to the Vilna Gaon to go make peace, because the Vilna Gaon was not a fan of Hasidus. Why was the Vilna Gaon not a fan of Hasidus? It might have to do with the outgrowth of the Shabtai Tzvi movement, and how difficult that was for the Jewish people. The civil unrest, the divide that came out of it, the manipulation of Kabbalah that came out of it. So for the Jewish people looking in their rearview mirror, they saw what happened in Shabtai Tzvi, and they became particularly uneasy about any movement that would manipulate or use Kabbalah for their own movements. This, if you remember, we spoke about the Ramchal last year. It was one of the reasons the Ramchal had to make his way to Israel, which is why he contracted that disease, ultimately passed away at 40 years old. We don't have the rest of the writings on the Ramchal because he wasn't allowed to teach Kabbalah. That was in the also same time period, a little earlier, same time period in the aftermath of Shabtai Tzvi. So too here, the Gra was not a fan. There were other things the Hasidim were already doing, which were what we would call, or what academics would call, antinomian, right, against the typical traditional rules. And in this way, the Gra was opposed. We actually have the wording of the Gra. We have it, it's a famous piece where the Gra talks about not getting involved with them and not marrying into them. He sends twice what we would call a cherim. Even back then, at that point, a cherim wasn't very strong. It didn't really carry a lot of weight. But they even say that there was, at one point, a rumor going around that the Gra had changed his mind. So the Gra reinforced his commentary and reinforced his stance and said, no, it's not true, I still oppose Hasidus. So the Gra really didn't like Hasidus. And as opposed to much of his life, he becomes a public figure only for this issue. He really doesn't have much of a public appearance, much of a public stance on anything, except for Hasidus. Again, why that's the case is unclear, but his descendants make amends for it later on. Not for now. But let's talk a little bit more about his student, who in many ways, or I guess depends what lens you look at it, in many ways continued that legacy of doubling down on the general tradition of Talmudic Judaism, as opposed to Hasidic Judaism, which at that point had been taking root in other areas of Europe. Rav Chaim of Volozhin was his main student. Rav Chaim Volozhin was his main student, and he was born in 1749. And what does it mean to be the main student? As I've told you, as we said before, the Gra was a recluse. He didn't really do much in public. So what does it mean to have a student? So they say that Rav Chaim Volozhin used to come to the Gra three times a year. He's considered his main student because he came to him three times a year. And he would come to him, and they would learn the Yerushalmi together. That's what they would have chavrusa in Yerushalmi, because Yerushalmi was often neglected. The Bavli was focused on more. If you remember, we talked about this concept a little bit by the Netziv. The Netziv focused on neglected Chazal texts that were from the same time period, the same rabbis of the Gemara, but other people preferred to look at the popular stuff as opposed to the Midrashim of this or that. Rav Chaim Volozhiner starts the yeshiva of Volozhin only after the Gra passes away. But the Gra had reinvigorated a certain commitment to serious Talmudic study. Talmudic study getting back to what the Gemara was trying to say, as opposed to building upon, building upon the Rishonim, or building upon, the Shulchan Aruch and the other Mefarshei Shulchan Aruch, the commentaries. He was going back to the Gemara. And I say this, sort of skipped ahead to the end of his life, just to bring home a point about the Gra's life itself, which is that the Gra himself still saw the Gemara as the source of what we should be doing. He didn't necessarily see the Shulchan Aruch as the end point, even though the Shulchan Aruch was written a couple hundred years before him. The Shulchan Aruch, right, Rav Yosef Karo and the Ramah come to a psak, they come to the end of the day, they come to a bottom line, what the people should do. Nonetheless, the Gra saw himself as his own decisor. And he said that we should be looking at the Gemara. There are interesting ideas about Rabbi Yosef Karo, including other, streams of Judaism, streams of thought in terms of Kabbalah and other things that influenced his psak. So the Gra said, we've got to go back to the basics, back to the source, back to the Gemara. And that's why many of the Minhagim, and this comes to another point, you've got to sort of bring all these things together, but many of the Minhagim in Eretz Yisrael follow the Gra, and many of those Minhagim are based solely on the reading of Gemara. So for instance, I don't think anyone in this is not a popular minhag of the Gra, but the Gra never said Kabbalah Shabbos. Right? Friday night between Mincha Amar, we have all these songs, all these Tehillim. The Gemara never mentioned such a thing. That was sort of invented or developed by the Chachamim in Sfat in the time of the Shulchan Aruch. And the Gra says it's never mentioned in the Gemara. We shouldn't do such a thing. And there are a lot of similarly brachas that you shouldn't say that never mentioned in the Gemara. The Gra was very very opposed. If you remember my Shabbos Hagadol drasha that I printed out or that I sent out via email, he was opposed to wearing tefillin on Chol HaMoed, so he would not be happy with me. He was very staunchly, in support of saying Birchas Kohanim every single day, even outside of Eretz Yisrael. He would say you shouldn't say Baruch Hashem Le'olam, the long paragraph in Mariv. He said you shouldn't say Anim Zmiros every Shabbos, you should say it only on Yontifs. So there's a lot to be said for what the Gra changed, or what he thought should be changed, from the ongoing Mesorah of Judaism, because he believed that you should go back to your roots. You shouldn't necessarily build upon generation after generation, adding more and more and more, but rather going back to the roots, going back to the Gemara. This was the legacy of the Gra, and it's what prompted Rav Chaim Volozhiner to start the Volozhiner Yeshiva. We talked about this by the Netziv, perhaps one of the greatest yeshivas to ever be made in modern Jewish history, because it effectively re-entrenched the Jewish people into Talmudic scholarship, as opposed to Hasidism, which was going in a different direction, focusing more on davening, as opposed to Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, who was focusing more on Musar. Rav Chaim Volozhiner said, no, the Jewish people can still become, to continue serious academics, serious scholarship, and wisdom through the learning of Gemara. And that's what really started the modern yeshiva movement. All the yeshivas you see today are in many ways due to the fact that Rav Chaim Volozhiner doubled down on the movement of learning Gemara in a serious way, in a structured way, with a curriculum and with shiurim and things like that, and in a dormitory, which we totally spoke about at length during the Netziv's Legends and Lessons class. So, even though Hasidim generally spoke highly of the Gra didn't speak highly of the Hasidim, and legend has it that when Rav Shmuel of Nikolsburg and when the Balatina came back to the Magid of Mezrich, they said the Gra would not want to speak to us. He declined to have a meeting. The Magid responded, or the students apparently say, that if the Gra would have met with Rav Shmulka of Nikolsburg and with the Baal Tanya, Mashiach would have come right away. That's what the legend has it. Obviously, one of those things you can never really prove, but that's what the Maggid apparently said. Either way, that opposition continues to much of the Talmudic centric Jewish communities, and unfortunately, there are some aspects that it still exists a little bit today. But by and large, everyone has come to a certain comfort level with Hasidus, no matter what side of the aisle you're on, because we realize that, and this is also again my take, we realize that it's not the same kind of threat that Shabtai Tzvi posed, because they're not really abusing or manipulating the Ma'amari Chazal in the way that we were always fearful people would do. I wish we had the same realization by the Ramchal as we mentioned then. But either way, story has it just a little bit about the character of the Gra. I think I've told this story in a different context before. I think I said it in a Pshitzka on the Parsha once for Parsha of Maaseh. I remember just because I remember the topic. The Dubna Magid was once invited by the Vilna Gaon to come to Vilna. The Dubna Magid was someone who would go around to different places. This is what Magid used to mean. Magid used to mean you'd go down to different places, different cities, and you'd give chizuk to people. You'd give musr. You'd try to inspire them to be better. Sometimes it was harsh. Sometimes it was more positive. But either way, that's what the Dubna Magid came. By the end of Shabbos, the Gra was very upset with the Magid. They say that the Gra, the Magid was packing up his stuff to go home, and the Talmidim of the Gra come to the Magid and say, the Gra wants to see, I don't know what they called him, Reb Eliyahu wants to see you right away. Right? The Gaon wants to see you right away. So the Dibna Magid says, the Gaon wants to see me, what did I do? I hope I didn't say anything wrong. He comes to the Gra and he says, sorry, Rebbe, what did I do? What did I say that was so that you wanted me for? He said, you came here and you gave Musr all of Shabbos. The whole time you were giving Musr. But you never gave me any Musr. So he says to the Dibna Magid, what do you have to say to me? And the Dibna Magid says, you're the Gra, you're the Vilna Gaon. I can't give you Musr. He says, no, you came here to give Musr, give me Musr. So he says to the Gra, he says, you think it's any big kuntz? You think it's a big deal to be a Gaon in Vilna? Go somewhere else and be a Gaon and see how easy it is. That was his Musr to the Vilna Gaon, who was living in Vilna, which is a big metropolis for the Jewish people. It was obviously a place where he could be a Gaon because of all the resources that were available to him in that big city. And there are two versions of the story. First of all, there's some versions of the story that aren't even involving the Dubna Magid or the Gra, so that's for a different time. But either way, according to the legend that this was with the Gra, there are two accounts as to what the Vilna Gaon responded. He's number one, one story is that he tore Kriya. He said, yeah, you're right. You're right. I haven't taken on my full, the fullest extent of what I could be doing because I've taken the easy way out. That's one account of the story. The other account of the story is, Enochanami. The Gra says, you're right. The reason I'm here in Vilna is because that's where HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants me to be. My tafkid is to be here in Vilna. My tafkid is not to go and rough it out in some other place. This is my tafkid is to lead the Jewish people that are here in Vilna. Two different accounts of how it happened. What did the Gra think about Eretz Yisrael? So apparently the Gra was hoping to get to Eretz Yisrael. It was very complicated for him, and apparently he wanted to, but he never made it. His students, however, did. Many of his students end up in Eretz Yisrael, and as I said before, that's why many of the minhagim that are in Eretz Yisrael were established by the Gra's students. At that point, there wasn't a very strong, at least in Yerushalayim, there wasn't a very strong base of from Talmudic scholarship in Eretz Yisrael, and his students brought it back, and that's why when they reestablished the religiosity of general Yerushalayim, so that's why much of the minhagim we find even today are based on the Gra. So as I said, we know a lot of the different writings of the Gra. The Gra has commentaries on a lot of different things, although they're very, very, sometimes very difficult to really decipher. He speaks in code when it comes to Shulchan Aruch. He's quoting this thing and that thing. And in order to actually understand what the Gra is saying, you have to look at all the sources he quotes to figure out what he means. But either way, the Gra sometimes is more elaborative, that we'll see in a second, in terms of how that happens and what's an example of that. But either way, this is most of the Gra's legacy. He has commentaries on the Gemara. He has commentaries on the Shulchan Aruch. He has commentaries on a lot of Tanakh. He has commentaries. He's known for his commentary on Mishlei. We've quoted him a few times in our class on Mishlei, in this slot on other Monday nights. He never made it to Eretz Yisrael, but his students did. And ultimately, his legacy was directly continued by the Volozhiner Yeshiva. But we are all, in one way or another, students of the Vilna Gaon because of the Minhagim, because of sort of the trailblazing nature of his perspective. That we can go back to the source, we can go back to learning Gemara. We're all in one way or another affected. I'm personally affected in many ways. Most yeshiva students nowadays are affected by that because of Rav Chaim Volozhiner continuing that trend into the Volozhiner Yeshiva. A famous piece by the Gra that comes up on Sukkos. This was, for those of you who got the Shul Bulletin, this was the answer to riddle number 6. I think it was riddle number 6, the last riddle. The general consensus is, and this is how the Torah talks about it, the general consensus is that the reason Sukkos is in the fall, the reason Sukkos is in the fall is specifically because it's a time where people usually go back inside, right? They had a beautiful spring, they had a beautiful summer, and now people are going back inside. And instead, the Jewish people, Hashem wants us to say, no, we're going to commit ourselves to Hashem. Even though everyone else is going inside, we're going to go outside. We're going to, we're going to deal with the breeze. We're going to, hold up to the cold Detroit weather. We're going to go in the sukkah, right? As a sign of an expression of our commitment. The Vilna Gaon believes that it was more than that. And just like every other Jewish holiday, you think of, for a second, you think, Shavuos, what happened on Shavuos? We got the Torah. There's a bit of Machlokas, was it the 6th of Sivan, was it the 7th of Sivan, Shabbos, Pechas? We could talk about it at a different time. But that happened, mamish, on the holiday of Shavuos. That's what Shavuos is known for. Or the Shtei HaOmer, also that same day. That's when the day is. That's what we celebrate. Pesach, the 15th of Nisan, that's when the Jewish people left Mitzrayim. So we celebrate Pesach on the time that it actually happened. Rosh Hashanah, it's the first day of the year, so we celebrate the first day of the year, a fresh new slate. Yom Kippur, the time that Moshe Rabbeinu came down from Har Sinai and gained forgiveness for the Jewish people. So that's the time. The day represents the exact same historical date that something happens. What happened on the 15th of Tishrei? What historical event happened on the 15th of Tishrei? There seems to not be any actual historical event, as opposed to every other Jewish holiday. Says the Vilna Gaon, it's not true. As we know, the Pasuk tells us, the reason we sit in Sukkahs, Leman Yedu Doroseichem, so that the population, that the generations later will know, that the Jewish people were taken out with sukkahs. That's how they were brought into the Midbar. But not just that. When I took them out of Egypt. Obvious question and answer here. When did Hashem take us out of Egypt? Was it in Tishrei? Of course not. It was in Nisan. So a simple question, says the Gra. Why do we celebrate Sukkos in Tishrei? Because it's in direct symbolism of the clouds of glory, the Anani HaKavod of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, in the time when he took us out of Egypt. We began the period of the protection of the clouds, specifically in Nisan. So, for all the Jewish mothers out there, imagine, you have 8 days of Pesach, and then you go right into 8 days of Sukkos. Imagine how much cooking you'd have to do. How quickly you'd have to get the chametz turned around. Says the Gra, you should have Sukkos right after Pesach. Better yet, make them at the same time. Make only chametz, only matzah in the sukkah. You do a 2-for-1. Maybe the Jewish mothers would like that even more. So why is it that why do we have sukkahs specifically in Tishrei? Why isn't it in Nisan? Because that was the time when the clouds of glory actually surrounded us for the first time. Says the Gra, beautiful, beautiful reading of a beautiful reading of the Psukim. Amnam Yesh Lomar. Lefi Shek She'asu Es Ha'egel Nistalku Hananim. When the Jewish people ultimately worshiped the golden calf, what happened? Hashem removed himself from the Jewish people. He took away those clouds. So we can't celebrate the clouds that happened before the golden calf. Those were clouds that were taken away from us. Says the Gra, that's why we can't celebrate it in Nisan. But when did the clouds come back? V'az lo chazru ad she'ischilu asos ha'mishkan. When did the clouds come back? The clouds of glory, the Anani HaKavod, only came back when the Jewish people started to build the Mishkan. When did the Jewish people start to build the Mishkan? U'moshe yarad b'yom ha'kippurim. Moshe came down on Yom Kippur when he brought down the Luchos, the second Luchos. U'v'machras Yom Kippurim. And after Yom Kippur, the Pasuk says, that I think this is in Parashas Kisisa, Perek Chaf Dalet, v'yakel Moshe v'yitzivah malachas ha'mishkan. Moshe Rabbeinu teaches the Jewish people, he gathers them all together and says, let's build the Mishkan. That was the day after Matan Torah. That was the day after Moshe Rabbeinu came down from Har Sinai on Yom Kippur. The day after that was the 11th of Tishrei, where he announced to everyone, let's start to build the Mishkan. Uchsiv, and then the Pasuk says, V'ha'am heviu od nedava baboker baboker. It says, on the morning and in the morning, says the Gra, that's 2 days. How long did it take for all the Jewish people to collect all the materials they were going to use for the Mishkan? 2 days. Baboker, baboker. Hare Yud Gimel B'Tishrei. The 12th and the 13th of Tishrei they used to collect all of the materials. Uvi Yud Dali B'Tishrei. And on the 14th, the Pasuk tells us, Natzlu Kochacham Lev Mimoshe. All the artisans, all of the workers took all of the material from Moshe. Es Hazav B'Minyam B'Mishkal. In the right amount, in the right proportions. Uvachamisha asar, and on the 15th of Tishrei, hischilu lasos. That's when they finally started to actually build. That was what we would call the groundbreaking. Those little shovels that you get, you put in a plaque. You know what our little shovel is? Our little shovel is the sukkah. The sukkah remembers for us the groundbreaking of the Mishkan. Because when we had the groundbreaking of the Mishkan, as chazru ha'anane kavod ulakach anu osim sukkos betus tesvav Tishrei, the reason we sit in a sukkah on the 15th of Tishrei is because that's the exact day where Hashem brought back the clouds of glory. That's when we got the anane kavod back. We don't celebrate the first anane. We don't celebrate the first clouds. Those clouds are already gone. We lost those clouds by the egel azav, by the golden calf. The only clouds that we celebrate on the 15th of Tishrei is in remembering the same thing that happened, just like every other holiday. We remember what happened on the 15th of Tishrei when the Anane HaKavod came back. And that only happened when we started to build the Mishkan. When we started to build the Mishkan, Hashem says, you're now building me a home to protect my Shechina, to protect my presence. I'm now going to reintroduce the home that I gave you originally, the Anane HaKavod, the clouds of glory, to give you a home. And it's that reason that we start the holiday of Sukkot, specifically on the 15th of Tishrei, going out of the house as opposed to everywhere else going into the house. That's a nice idea. But practically, says the Gra, it has to be sourced, just like every other holiday has to be sourced with some kind of historical event. And that's exactly how it happened. A beautiful read of the Psukim and a beautiful commentary of the Gra. And that's also the answer to one of the riddles. If you look back at the bulletin from last week, you will see it there. That's it in more detail. And that's the legacy of the Gra, always giving a little bit of an innovative angle, something he was not afraid to do. When you look back to the sources, willing to disagree with the Shulchan Aruch, willing to disagree with some Rishonim sometimes, that's who the Gra was, all the way as a child, already mastering much of the text that we now pore over. He was sought after as one who ultimately was able to inculcate all of those texts and understand the breadth of all Torah knowledge. And that's what the legacy of the Gra is, literally the legacy of all yeshiva students around the world, a focus on getting back to our roots, getting back to the source, understanding the reasons for things, not just based on later generations, but based on the study of what the earlier of the, what the Chazal generation had to say. And that's what we continue to do today. And that's a little bit of the background of who the Vilna Gaon was, Rabbi Eliyahu, maybe Kramer, Rabbi Eliyahu ben Shlomo Zalman. So hopefully next time you hear about the Gra, you hear about who the Vilna Gaon, you'll be able to have a little bit of appreciation for him. Just one last piece, and this is about his Yahrzeit. The Gra ultimately passes away in 1797 on the 19th of Tishrei. That's this Wednesday. Tomorrow night is the Gra's Yahrzeit, and it is of particular, irony. The Gra, who was in many ways, you know, very ultra halachic, right? We think about the legacy that he left with the Volozhin, ultimately with Brisk. Brisk is all about the study of Torah and being serious about Torah. He ends up passing away on the holiday of Zman Simchasenu. Zman Simchasenu, a time to be joyous, a time to not be as serious. And as opposed to that, his counterpart in many ways, the Baal Shem Tov, who was all about Simcha, it was all about having an ecstasy in Judaism. When did the Baal Shem Tov pass away? He passed away on Shavuos, the holiday of being serious about Talmud Torah. So what we see in their death is this great meeting of the minds, where the Gra passes away during Zman Simchasenu, the Baal Shem Tov passes away during Zman Matan Torah Senu, that although they might have fought in their lives, they come together in death. So the Vilna Gaon's Yahrzeit is tomorrow night. We remember him, we remember his life, we remember all of the Torah that he taught us. And Mirtz Hashem, we continue to understand all of that Torah with a greater appreciation for who he was. Thank you all for coming. I wish everyone a good Moed, a Moadim L'Simcha, and Mirtz Hashem, a wonderful rest of Zman Simchasenu. A joyous holiday and a joyous year.
Thank you.
Thank you all. Thanks, Cherna. Thank you, Hildis. Good to see you. Thank you, Evan. Nice to see you. Hope you guys are doing well. Good to see you, Foxes. May you feel better. Whatever's going on, I hope you rest up.